Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
When it comes to child support, many brothers and sisters just come to the conclusion that I'm just done. There is nothing I can do. They got me. Well, what we need to understand is this whole system is bogus, believe it or not. And for proof of that, why don't you send for my free articles? We'll also send one good audio clip and one good solid video clip to you. And by the time you listen to this and read this, you will clearly understand that there is a way out. You can send that to taraka53@hotmail.com. That's taraka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right straight to you. Don't hesitate to visit my website, www.newdebtelimination.com. For information on us, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. Don't hesitate to call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's not over. It's just what you know. Peace.
Hello again. How may I help you?
I wanted to ask you something about third-party debt collectors. What are my rights and how do I deal with the annoying phone calls? This is for a bullshit order passed down by the courts for my parking ticket.
Well, if the debt
When it comes to child support, many brothers and sisters just come to the conclusion that I'm just done. There is nothing I can... Hi, I'm Tahaka Amana El Bay. There's some very important things that we need to consider when dealing with police stops. First of all, does failure to wear a seatbelt constitute a breach of the peace? Is it a public nuisance? Is there an injured party? If a policeman stops you, is he an officer of the law? Has he taken a public oath of office? Is he a public official? Criminal impersonation in the first degree is a felony. In order to exercise your freedom of rights successfully, contact me, Tahaka Amana El Bay, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now send an email, tahaka53@hotmail.com.
Welcome, Moors, to Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay. And this evening, we are going to be dealing with a very, very important subject. I'm going to try my best to get this into, well, ain't no sense in me telling that tale, because we're going to cover this thing over a period of time. Update, law, contracts, child support, student loan, mortgages, and taxes. We're going to deal with all of it. We're going to get down into all of it. Keep in mind, I hope you got your pencil and paper handy. Take some notes on this stuff because we're going to lay it out for you this evening. And we're going to actually go into the documents and bring these documents out so you can hear how these documents is worded, see how they're worded, see what kind of language, how we're using it, so that you can do the same thing. We'll be dealing with the following question. What language and words are being used against you? How do contracts bind us? What is the most powerful documentation that we can use to defend ourselves? And in these three questions will hinge everything that we're attempting to do here this evening by laying it all out and actually dealing with the documents and bringing that to you. And we hope that you have questions. We also had some excellent success today in the courtroom. It was quite interesting, and they told us they're going to call in today and tell us their story of what happened inside the courtroom using the materials and the teachings and stuff that we have going, okay? So, first of all, I'm going to start right off with the mortgage right away. For those of you who are new to this broadcast for the very first time, listen, I'm going to read this for you. This was sent to me by the county recorder's office and the mortgage company. We'll start with document number one. It's addressed to me in my commerce capacity, and it says, enclosed, please find a recorded release of mortgage full reconveyance document that has been filed with the county recorder's office on behalf of the mortgage company. When your lender releases your mortgage loan through a refinance, sale of property, or otherwise, your lender or servicer is required to notify the county recorder where the property is located that the reference loan is now released, period. The enclosed document is for your records. No additional action need be taken on your part. Okay? That's the first document. Okay, here comes the notarized copy. It clearly states, recording requested and prepared by TD Services Company, 4000 Dust Metropolitan Drive, Street 400, Orange, California, 92868, Julian E. Yanez. Satisfaction of mortgage. Note all men by these presents that the undersigned holder of a certain mortgage whose parties, dates, and recordings information are below, does hereby acknowledge that it has received full payment and satisfaction of the same. Accordingly, the county recorder is hereby authorized and directed to discharge the same upon the recorded same mortgage, original mortgager, and my name, and so on and so forth. Now, this is just a standard procedure or documentation. In my case, there was no paying for a mortgage. It's just standard procedure for the proper wording, and the same thing goes from someone who has actually paid for their mortgage. Same documentation that's issued by the county recorder's office, and it's the same thing that's issued by the mortgage company releasing it. That's it, done, finished, over, complete, through. Okay? Now, this evening, we're going to be touching on your mortgages, your child support, your taxes, so on and so forth. We're going to deal with all of it and get as much of it in as we possibly can. We may have to come back tomorrow, may have to come back Wednesday, but we're going to get it all in. Any questions that you may have, go ahead and raise your hands, and we will be answering these questions as we go along. Keep in mind that this Thursday night coming at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have Dr. Scott Whitaker that will be with us this Saturday night, okay? So make sure that you are here. Also, on the 17th, which is next Tuesday, we'll have Michael I.M. Hotep as our special guest. He's the host of the African History Network. He will be here at Morris Talk Live 100, and he'll be broadcasting live with us. And also on the 19th, I will be on the African History Network, so make sure you catch that. I'll be coming in about 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so make sure that you catch those broadcasts because they will be happening here. But whatever you do Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, make sure you hear Dr. Scott Whitaker will be taking care of all our health needs and answering some of the most awesome questions ever presented to any doctor right here on Morris Talk Live 100. Okay, the next document I want to talk to you about before we go on to any plugs whatsoever And we want to deal with a document called a Notice of Understanding and Intent and Claim of Right. Now, when we understand that the United States of America does not interfere with your right to make contract. So that means that you have the right to fashion your own contracts and deliver your own contracts and enforce your own contracts. The problem has been that we have been accepting everybody else's contract, but we have not created any, and we are not in the habit of creating contracts and putting other people in positions where they have to answer our contracts. And this is something that we got to get in the habit of doing. We got to do that. Okay? We got to do that. And until we do that, we're still going to be in a position where somebody else is giving us their contracts and compelling us to perform a dance to their music. When you do a notice of understanding and intent and claim of right document, that gives you the power to lay out all of what you believe according to law. And the advantage that you have is to simply put in the law. And what's to your advantage is the fact that the United States is a corporation and they are operating under the enforcement of public policy, which is masquerading as law. That's your advantage. That's where you're able to get them. Okay? That's how you get them. Thumbing through these documents right now, I'm trying to get down there. I should have had all this stuff laid out, but I've been so busy today with people all over the country on the telephone with different situations going on and so on and so forth. And we will be coming right up with that Notice of Understanding and Intended Claim of Right. But right now, we're going to deal with a simple, very, very simple document. And this is something that you can use on child support, you can use for mortgage, you can use for any type of debt that you want. And keep in mind, you can be courteous and professional when you lay out your documentation. Now, this document here is a simple debt validation letter, very, very simple. It's addressed, it says debt validation letter at the top, attempt to validate debt, period. Your name, city, state, and zip code. And it's to whoever it is you're sending to, the date and the account number that is in question. And it simply says, to whom it may concern. This letter is being sent to you in response to a notice sent to me on, about, and that's very, very important for us to stipulate on it or about, instead of trying to be exact, because we don't want any technicalities, anybody to get off the hook on any technicalities. Be advised that this is not a refusal to pay, but a notice sent pursuant to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act 15 U.S.C. 1692G Section 809B that your claim is disputed and validation is requested. This is not a request for verification or proof of my mailing address, but a request for validation made pursuant to the above named title and section. I respectfully request that your office provide me with competent evidence that I have any legal obligation to pay you. Please provide me with the following. What the money you say I owe is for. Explain and show me how you calculated what you say I owe. Provide me with copies of any papers that show I agree to pay what you say I owe. Provide a verification or copy of any judgment of, if applicable. Identify the original creditor. Prove the state the statute of limitations has not expired on this account. Show me that you are licensed. Now, here we go. Show me that you are licensed to collect a debt in my state. Provide me with your license number and registered agent. These questions should be answered. Also, who is the current owner of this alleged debt? Who is the original creditor of this alleged debt? If so-and-so is the current owner, when was it purchased? Who was it purchased from? Have you assigned the alleged debt to another entity for collection? If so, who? If so-and-so has sold or otherwise transferred this alleged debt, to whom was it sold to and when? At this time, I will also inform you that if your office have reported invalidated information to any of the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, or TransUnion, this action might constitute fraud under both federal and state laws. Due to this fact, if any negative mark is found on any of my credit reports by your company or the company that you represent, I will not hesitate in bringing legal action against you for the following: violation of the Fair Debt Credit Reporting Act, violation of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, defamation of character. If your officers are able to provide the proper documentation as requested in the following declaration, I will require at least 30 days to investigate this information. During such time, all collection activity must cease and desist. Also, during this violation period, if any action is taken which could be considered detrimental to any of my credit reports, I will consult with my legal counsel for suit. This includes any listing, any information to a credit reporting repository that could be inaccurate or invalidated or verified or account or accurate when, in fact, there is no provided proof that it is. If your officers fail to respond to this validation request within 30 days from the date of this receipt, all references to this account must be deleted and completely removed from my credit file, and a copy of such deletion request shall be sent to me immediately. I would also like to request, I'm in writing, that no telephone contact be made by your offices to my home or to my place of employment. And it goes on to stipulate what will happen if they violate that. Attempt, it says, attempt telephone communication with me, including but not limited to computer-generated calls and calls of correspondence sent to or with a third party. It will be considered harassment, and I will have no choice but to file suit. All future communications with me must be done in writing and sent to the address noted in this letter by United States Postal Service. It will be advised that you assure that your records are in order before I am forced to take legal action. This is an attempt to correct your records. Any information obtained shall be used for that purpose. Best regards, your signature and your name. Okay. There's absolutely no need for a notary republic. This document is a simple, very simple debt validation letter. And I always recommend that we use something simple. You might want to start off, when you're dealing with these people and you're getting stuff in the mail, just send them a letter. Because, of course, they got it addressed to you in all capital letters. That's your first line of defense. Could you please refrain regarding me as a fiction, a slave, a property, a chattel, or a corporate entity? I am a man or a woman. Please contact me by mail, and please record my name properly as a man or woman. Record it properly in upper and lower case letters. Okay, if you get a bill the first of the month or whenever you get one in, that's your first line of defense. Go ahead and attack that corporate fiction with a simple letter. Make sure you got a copy for your records and a copy for theirs. And you may want to, next time, if they do it, just next time, go ahead and get it notarized and sent to them, and keep these records in your file so that you can clearly show at any given point in time that you have made every considerable effort to stop the fraud against the fiction. Okay, we want to have evidence. No evidence, no case. Now we're going on to the second most powerful document. I want you to pay very, very close attention to this plug right here before we go into the next set of documents, okay? Hold your hat. Sit still for a moment.
In our last video, where we were talking about liens and slavery, under the straw man name, the all caps name, we stopped on this issue. I had mentioned that I'd been hearing an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth. What most people don't tell you is that most attorneys will not respond to an affidavit. So, whenever you file a complaint, whenever you do the instrument lien process, you always want to include an affidavit. Now, as I mentioned, I'd been hearing that an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth. I know now, because I've spent the last hour and a half doing research on it, that an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth. I have proof now. So what I will do is I will provide you that proof. This law here, it says the Court of Appeal may not assume truth of allegations in a pleading which are contradicted by affidavit. Okay. So that can kind of lead a person to say, well, that's your proof right there, but that's not the proof. Here is the proof. We have here, well, let me explain what I had to do. I had to take that statement, and I had to continue with that statement that an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth. So here is a court case with a gentleman named Poole. And it says, his claim is sufficient pleading to satisfy the pleading requirement of Rule 32. This is obviously an Arizona case. It says, and his factual allegations were unrefuted by the state. Therefore, they must be accepted as truth. And then it mentions Bass versus the state. And this was done in 1992. When the state does not respond to a petitioner's allegation, the unrefuted statement of facts must be taken as truth. Then it lists Smith versus State in 1991. In addition, his claim is not precluded by any of the provisions of the rule. Because his claim is not barred, is sufficiently pled, and is unrefuted by the state, Poole is entitled for an opportunity to prove his claim. In other words, they couldn't dismiss this case. And I guarantee you, if you go back and look at this case in the original court, you will find that the very first thing the prosecution did is ask for a motion to dismiss. The judge went along with it. He appealed it. The appeal court reversed that decision. Why? Because not only did he have an affidavit, but he alleged the affidavit fact that it had not been refuted. And an unrefuted affidavit stands as truth in law. It's a maxim. I just needed to find the maxim. And so you have three cases here, the Poole case, the Bates case, and the Smith case. Now, let me explain why this was important, why I needed to do this. Every last one of my complaints that have been filed, the last 10, I always include the word affidavit. There is always an affidavit attached to the complaint, or I make the affidavit part of the complaint. Why? Because the affidavit stands as truth. I knew the maxim, just never knew where to find it. So here are three cases showing that. None of the attorneys have ever responded to a single affidavit in a single case. However, in the UPS case that I continue to mention to all of you, the attorney provided an affidavit from someone who had no knowledge of the case. This is just somebody who works for UPS, who is aware of its tariffs and rules, but he had nothing to do with the case. I responded to that affidavit, and I refuted every single point by point, line by line. Why? Because an affidavit must be refuted point by point. You'll see that in a minute. Now, this is one case, and to let you know, I did a Google search on unrefuted affidavit, but because I'm not online anymore, this is the Court of Criminal Appeals of Alabama, and this is Poole versus State. And again, this was the final decision of March 2007, but as you saw the date of the case, it was earlier than that. The Bates and Smith case was 1991, 1992. So this is the Poole case, 2007. So apparently this pro se litigant did his research. So his name is David Lawrence Poole, and he appeals to the circuit court and summary denial of his Rule 32. So basically he filed a petition. When you sign a plea agreement in the state of Arizona or Alabama or any other state, and it's a federal Rule 32 that you are allowed to ask for post-conviction, after you've been convicted because you signed the plea agreement, relief. Well, Poole asked for post-conviction relief, and they denied his claim. The only problem is he did an affidavit with it. And because of him doing an affidavit, it couldn't be summarily denied if the affidavit wasn't refuted. There are some other issues that they mentioned, that he sufficiently pled his case. In other words, he listed all the pertinent issues. In other words, he gave the right of claim, who he was, who the defendant was. He gave the who, what, when, where, and hows. And because he did that, his case was remanded back to the state court. So the court summarily denial of his rule number 32, and that was the circuit court. I guess the circuit court is like a superior court or district court or state district court. But it lets us know, and see, it has nothing to do with what he was originally charged for, but because he's doing an appeal of that original charge, then that's what he was appealing. If you are doing a civil case like we are, you will appeal all of the missteps, the fact that you asked for a common law trial, the fact that you made the court aware that you were reserving all of your rights, and so on and so forth. This video will be a lot smaller than the other videos. This is just an update. Okay, the next case is Sharon Hayes, and she was representing her deceased husband, and she was handling the estate of Howard Hayes. Now, she's the plaintiff and the appellant because even she had a problem with her case, where her case was denied. Her case was dismissed. Now, they go ahead and they explain why the case was dismissed and everything, and give me a second. I'm hoping it'll let me refresh because I'm not on the internet, so it may or may not. These are just pages that I saved, and I'm trying to, as a matter of fact, let's do it an easier way. Instead of me looking for the sections, let me go ahead and pull up the sections. Note, we're going to talk about the first case. We'll come back to Mrs. Hayes in a minute, but we're going to talk about the first case that I took a look at, and this is Avery. Forgot the full name of this case, but I do know that the defendant's name was Avery. It says, additionally, Avery's claim that the trial court was without jurisdiction to render the judgment or to impose sentence because he said, although he was indicted for burglary in the third degree, he pled guilty to and was convicted of burglary in the second degree, which means that without an indictment, you're going to see that that's what the court ruled. It says he attached a copy of his indictment showing that the indictment was for burglary in the third degree, so he gave evidence, and a copy of an Ireland form indicating that Avery had pled guilty to burglary in the second degree. The state's response to Avery's petition did not address the merits of Avery's jurisdictional claim. Therefore, Avery's unrefuted claim must be accepted as true. And then it lists Bates versus State, 1992. And again, Bates is going to list Smith versus State, 1991. Now it says if the defendant, and this is still Avery, pleads guilty to an offense for which he has not been indicted, the trial court does not have jurisdiction to render judgment on a guilty plea. So when you raise jurisdiction and you do it on the onset, if the trial court has no jurisdiction, none of the rulings stand. In each of my cases, jurisdiction has been the issue, and the judge repeatedly refuses to bring up on the record what the jurisdiction is. So as I stated before, because I filed under jurisdiction of common law, I'm going to continue under that jurisdiction until another jurisdiction is stated on the record, because the jurisdiction of common law is on the record, the original filing. Doesn't matter how they changed the name. Doesn't matter how they changed the caption. They did so without doing it on the record, and thus it can't stand. Okay, getting back to, now here we go to the Pools claim. That's what we just read. Okay, so that was that case, and as you see, everything that was in that case is here. Now, let's see, I'm hoping it will let me. Let's do a back and a back. Okay, let's do this particular claim. Like I said, I'm working with this software, but this software I kind of like. So I'll eventually adjust my accelerator, my video accelerator, and then I won't have the problem. I believe you're able to see the screen clearly, but when I'm looking at the screen, the words bunch up together because of the accelerator, and the program tells me that it doesn't work well with accelerators. But Dury plays this claim in his petition with sufficient specificity, to satisfy the pleading requirements in Rule 32 and Rule 32.6b, and the state.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, the gist of what I was trying to get to in playing this plug is the importance of your affidavit. When you do an affidavit, that is a charging instrument. That forces your opponent to take action. Being that it is a contract and it is formulated by you, you can be as intricate as you wish to be. And in that affidavit, each point has to be addressed. That is the law. Each point had to be addressed. Each point has to be refuted or rebutted by a specific time limit that is up to you to give. You can give 30 days. You can give 14 days. You give 10 days. But by law, 5 days. And what I like to do is I like to give them plenty of enough time, which clearly shows I wasn't in a hurry. You got plenty of time to verify all the law. Now, keep in mind, what's to your advantage is the fact that they are operating on the public policy, which is masquerading as law. But when the law comes in, you see, there's a whole different ballgame. You cannot take public policy and make it law in the face of law. No, you can't do that. So when you present these people with your contract, with your affidavit, which is signed, witnessed, and notarized, and you have the law in your points. So the more points you got, the better it is. Okay, I want to get to this next document here. And what I've done with this document, this is a simple notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. This is where you get an opportunity to put down your understanding of what law is. Okay, you don't want to be confused and thinking public policy is law. So this is where you get a chance to lay it all out, point by point, and where you can even go in and add a section on the definitions of the words that you're using straight out of Black's Law Dictionary, which makes your documentation totally impregnable. That's the object of the game behind your contract. You have force of law behind you. First of all the rights, and we got to get away from this thinking that, you know, somebody giving us some rights. It doesn't work that way. All rights that you have are the rights that you were born with. They're inherited rights at birth. You have a right to travel at birth. You have a right to a nationality at birth. All these things are at birth. We got to get away from thinking that somebody, there's some kind of program somewhere that's giving us some rights. No. No, all these things are at birth. Okay, hold on. We got a call off. Area code 240. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment?
I'm calling from D.C. My name is Daoud, Brother Tahaka.
Hey, Daoud.
Hey, how you been? Long time no hear.
I've been fine, man.
You do?
What's on your mind?
Now, when you're doing that affidavit, mm-hmm. and you could do the affidavit against anybody, like a mortgage or anything else, and also, when you put in the affidavit, you could put in that they are dealing with a deceit or your estate, that you claim your estate and put the type of things like a bill of lading on your estate that they're doing business with, the all cap name.
You can do that any kind of way you want to do that. If I was formulating an affidavit and mm-hmm. I was going to use my estate letter, and I was going to also use a bill of lading, verification of the cargo or what have you. What I would do is I would incorporate it within the law, and I would set it, I would make mention of it, and then I would say, see exhibit so-and-so. In the case of the estate,
okay.
see exhibit A1, and then I would take the estate letter and at the top take a pen and write A1. Even though it's a typed brief, I would write across the top, see exhibit A1, and I would add that as an attachment, and then I would go on to the next segment, talk about the bill of lading, see exhibit A2, and then I will write that in there and, mm-hmm. and mark that on the top of that, a bill of lading. Whatever I'm adding it in as an exhibit, as the same way that I would do in a court case. I would like to enter in Exhibit A. You ever seen old court trials where they take evidence and exhibit it A and they exhibit it into the record and stuff? Well, this is the same
yeah.
thing that you're doing, but you're putting it in writing. So whatever it is, you incorporate it, add it in as an exhibit, and then send it where you got to send it.
Right, that's what I was told, that the judge only listened to the exhibit A. You don't have to do no explaining in court. You say refer, every time you ask you a question, you say refer to exhibit A, exhibit B, or so on and so forth, where you don't have to do no talking in your paperwork. Now, one more question, another question, Brother Tahaka. Now, garnishment, is it too late to ever come back and stop a garnishment?
Okay, now you're talking about stopping a garnishment.
Right.
Yeah. That's the first debt I started out with. See, when you, by sending a debt validation letter, you're questioning
mm-hmm.
the debt. Now, why would we question the debt? They claim
mm-hmm.
you owe them money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, how could you possibly owe them money when there's no money? America is in a 5-11 bankruptcy, there's no money. We got Oslo Resolution 192. For your signature. So call them out on that. Get them to commit to saying, yes, you owe us money. Here's no proof that you owe us money, and so on, so on, so on, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, previously, you've already questioned them, and you've already got on them and asked them repeatedly to refer to you as a man or a woman. You've already challenged their attempt to make you be something that you're not. You've already did that. You already did that. So now, here comes the debt validation letter. Okay? And then after that, now we're officially ready. We're going to take our time and methodically do this through what's called an administrative process, step by step. You send them something, your contract, they send you something back. But what you're doing is you're dragging them in. You're dragging them closer and closer under the bus. And then now we're officially
mm-hmm.
ready to send an affidavit. We're gonna switch gears and start putting things in the forms of affidavits. Now these are charging instruments. Now we're swinging hard.
Okay. So you say you're just setting them up, huh? Just bite them in, huh?
Yeah. Well, just think. Okay, look at all your bills. All your bills come to you addressing all capital letters. Okay, if that ain't you, go ahead and just, remind them, hey, you know, that you may have made a mistake and assume that I was a fiction, a corporate, a corporation, a chattel, a property, or somebody's slave. So let's, you know, I need you to correct that little minor error right there for me, and I'll send you a copy, and I'll keep a copy for my records that's dated and signed by me. And then if you do it again, then I say, well, you know, maybe you've missed it. You know, maybe you didn't receive my letter. This is in response to the first letter that was sent on date such thing in regarding me as someone that I'm not. I'm not a corporate fiction. I'm not property, chattel, slave. Please refer to me as a man. I am a living man. You see. Okay, so you got about three or four of those set. Now we're officially ready to call them on the dead. So we're calling them on the dead, and we're sending that, and we're asking them for their license to collect the debt, and if they give us that, they're really, really screwed up. And then after that, now we officially start sending the charging instrument. And we send them a copy. We're keeping a copy. We need proof of claim that they have received the copy, so we'll send a certified mail with return receipt, and then we'll get down into the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins, and then we'll start, we'll send some big bombs then, all in the form of affidavits. Now, they got a copy. We got a copy. We got a file on them. From day one, from the beginning of time, we clearly showing that we have made every effort humanly possible to be regarded as a man and for them to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that they can do business with a man. And in the face of bankruptcy and House Joint Resolution 192, you owe some money when there is no money.
Right. HR 192, sometimes they try to refute that, saying it don't exist. It's just a resolution. A resolution is something like a resolution is I'm gonna lose weight on December 31st or January 1st is a resolution, but it doesn't mean.
Well, now you got all the documents that you have sent. Your position is from day one. We don't need to get hung up on some little stuff like that. We can word it in the affidavit and say, well, look, I need you to provide proof of claim that our House Joint Resolution 192 was never signed into law.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I provide proof
of claim
that the United States is not currently operating in a bankruptcy and is not a corporation.
Right. A lot of these judges and stuff, sometimes these magistrates, sometimes try to help wiggle these people out. They try to help these people
get
out of it.
They job. That's their buddies. But see, the first thing you do, you go in there and you shoot his buddy. Get his buddy first. I'm going to show you how to do that later on in the broadcast. But hold on a minute, brother. I got a caller with his hand raised.
Go ahead.
Air code 772. Islam. Tell me who you are, where you calling from.
I'm Malika Shamsuddin from Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Okay.
And I was calling to find out, is there any Moorish Science temples in Florida? I've been having a hard time finding this out.
Well, no. What I always refer people to do is to contact the Moorish American government. You can go right there to moorishamericangov.org, and there is a national conference call, and they keep the records of all of the people across the country, the temples and stuff, where they got these things at, and you'll be able to get that information and also find out where there are other Moors in your immediate area so that you can communicate with them.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Okay. Another question. I have not been getting income tax in the past 3 years because they keep saying I owe them, and they usually just take my taxes at the end of the year instead of me paying out my check or what have them. Is there a way to get rid of that as well? Do I have to write the letters like you were saying?
Yeah, we have a complete package specially for the Internal Revenue Service, one specially for the child support, specially for the student loan. Special packages already set. You fill in the blanks and stuff, and then we'll walk you through how to deal with these people. But these are major, major documents, and there's information in these documents that really shake it up. And you can get that by going over to newsnation.com.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
You're welcome, sister. All right, Mo. If anybody else got any more questions, go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll open up the line so that you can ask your questions, okay? Now, I'm going into this next document that I was telling you about, and this is your notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. Now, this is a very, very powerful document because this is where you get a chance to let it hang out, let it all hang out. And I always, always have this document attached to the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, and I have all of the points that I'm particularly concerned about highlighted on that document, and I send this to them, and I always have it notarized and all of that good stuff, okay? I have all the entire Declaration of Human Rights from the General Assembly, and it is attached to a notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. It is automatically referred to as an affidavit, so therefore it is a charging instrument, and they are under obligation to perform on my contract. It says, and this is, in my opinion, this could be fashioned any way you want to fashion it. You can get your statutes out, the actual law court cases, Supreme Court cases, and incorporate these in there point by point, okay? It says, point one, where it is my understanding that the United States of America is a common law jurisdiction, and point two, where it is my understanding equality before the law is paramount and mandatory, and point three, where it is my understanding a statute is defined as a legislative rule of society which has been given the force of law. And point four, where it is my understanding a society is defined as a number of people joined by mutual consent to deliberate, determine, and to act for a common goal. And point five, where it is my understanding the only form of government recognized as lawful in the United States of America is a representative one. And point six, where it is my understanding representation requires mutual consent. And point seven, where it is my understanding that in the absence of mutual consent, neither representation nor governance can exist. And point eight, where it is my understanding all acts or statutes restricted in scope and applicably by the Constitution Act. And point nine, where it is my understanding Section 32 Constitution Act limited it to members and employees of government. And point ten, where it is my understanding those who have a Social Security insurance number are in fact employees of the federal government and thus are bound by the statutes created by the federal government. And this thing goes on and on and on. And we can simply put at the end of each one of these points the words, is it not? And if it is not, please provide proof of claim to the effect that it is not. Under each one, just that simple. Or we can attach a statute of law or a court case there proving our point and ask them to rebut this point or refute this case, you see. So when you're formulating your own contract, you are in the catbird seat. You are now officially operating like a giant corporation. And if you're sending these documents to them, they are compelled to perform according to the Affidavit Act. They got to perform. And an unrebutted affidavit, just like God said in the beginning, an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth. In other words, all points of that affidavit have to be refuted. Every last one of them. We can't, if you got 50, we can't do 49. Otherwise, the entire affidavit stands as truth. This is to your advantage. So what we have to do is start getting into position to simply start doing our contracts on these people. Okay? All right. Now, I'm not going to read the Declaration of Human Rights. You can just go right there online and read that, and you can create your own notice of understanding. For those of you who have my library, that document is in there. You can put it together with your Declaration of Human Rights, doctor it any kind of way you want to, and fix it up real, real nice, and send that to them, and they are compelled to respond. Okay? That's the law. All right, so we're going to the next phase, and then we're going to start dealing with a little bit of this, okay? So y'all hold on a minute.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
John, let me begin with you. You used to work for the IRS. What makes you say that most Americans don't have to pay income taxes?
Well, the sheer solidness of the evidence. I did about 2 years of investigation part-time while I was a special agent for the IRS, and really couldn't help but conclude that the evidence showed that most Americans weren't required to pay it, at least not according to the laws passed by Congress.
What is the evidence?
The evidence fills up dozens of binders and file drawers in my own home, but of course there's much more evidence than that. Evidence about liability, statutes, what form is actually required by Americans to file. When you actually look at the statutes and regulations rather than just the IRS pamphlets, you learn that the income tax doesn't have quite the application that the IRS would lead the American people to believe.
Congressman, you agree. You've written in the past that income taxes violate the 16th Amendment. Explain that idea.
Well, I'm more concerned about the way the 16th Amendment was passed, and I don't think it was technically correct. And I think Mr. Bannister is correct, and technically we shouldn't have to pay the income tax. It's just that I've chosen a different tactic. I think that we should change it in a more deliberate fashion, and that's why I'm a legislator. But, you know, we have the tax problem, and it's going to be with us for a long time, but this is a consequence of the spending problem. So that's why I spend as much time on trying to cut the spending so there's no incentive to collect these taxes. That's our biggest problem. But the way the tax system is run, it's run roughshod over the people. We don't have due process of law. We're guilty until proven innocent. It's just a horrible system, and we have to do something. Even if we can't get to the point where I like, where there's a lot less spending, we at least have to collect revenues in a much better manner than the income tax.
So do you sympathize with the estimated 1 million Americans who don't pay taxes based on principle?
Oh, yeah, I sympathize with them because I know what they're up against. Some of them do it out of desperation. Some of them do it as part-time just to survive, to feed their families. And economically, they serve the country well because they have more income and they spend more money. But that means you're defying the law, and that's a challenge, and you have to depend on the courts. And I just haven't chosen to do it that way. I'd like to legalize what they're doing.
Well, you're certainly not going to have much success as far as cutting spending over the next couple of years, right, with this administration.
Oh, unfortunately, you're correct. I mean, we're back into the 1960s, guns and butter. And there's not an entitlement that this Congress and this administration doesn't like. And there's not a foreign adventure that they seem to not to dislike. So we're embarked on endless spending, which means that's why right now you hear stories about adding more funds to the IRS, being more ruthless in collection, blaming it on the taxpayers. If they'd only pay their fair share, we could afford this government. But when you're running a $700 billion deficit, believe me, a little tinkering with the tax code isn't going to satisfy them.
Yeah. Let me read you what the IRS had on its website just a couple of weeks ago, get you both to respond to this. It said the IRS is committed to identifying taxpayers who attempt to avoid their tax obligations by taking frivolous positions such as the Section 861 position. The service will take vigorous enforcement action against these taxpayers and against promoters and return preparers who assist taxpayers in taking these frivolous positions. That was posted on March 22, 2004. Joe, would you describe the IRS's approach to you as vigorous?
Most certainly. The thing is that in my own manuals back when I was a special agent, the IRS, they compared tax avoidance to tax evasion. And tax avoidance, even according to the courts, is a legal method and something that people have a legal right and duty to engage in. And what the IRS is trying to do is blur the line between tax avoidance and tax evasion, and now they've come up with this new term called abusive tax avoidance. So basically, Americans are going to be targeted for harassment if they're engaging in legal conduct and making it difficult for the IRS by not bearing their financial souls to the agency.
It seems pretty aggressive. Why do you think you've been able to get away with not paying or filing your income taxes for so long?
Well, first of all, I've not gotten away with anything. I'm not hiding from anyone. I'm simply asking the IRS to show me the laws that apparently require me to do these things. and they are suspiciously reticent to answer questions from me, and of course there are millions of other people, many other organizations who have attempted to get answers. In fact, the Congress may be aware that we were trying to have a hearing whereby Department of Justice and IRS officials would appear and answer questions, and they pulled out at the last minute. And so they act very suspiciously when asked to simply sit down at the table with the American people and discuss what their obligations are. Well, rather than pulling up a chair, they pull out a club.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Joe. And Congressman, we also should add that the New York Times reported just today that for the 11,000 largest corporations, the chance of an audit has fallen by almost 50% in the last decade. The decline for individuals is even similar to that.
Yeah, I think that's going to change. They're going to try to reverse that, and that's why they've gotten more funds and more agents, and they guarantee there will be more audits. But there's no way that they can monitor the whole system. The system, in many ways, is based on trust and confidence that the American people are doing the right thing and spending the money correctly. But now there's a growing number of Americans that are sick and tired of it all. They don't believe that the entitlement system is going to work for everybody, and they don't believe in a lot of this foreign spending. So they're getting disgusted with it, and I think more people are trying to opt out. So ultimately, we have to face up to the fact that our government is too big and the spending is out of control, and the tax authorities are becoming out of control as well because they're determined to collect the revenues. And the Congress is silent on this now. A few years ago, they were up in uproar. They were going to tame the IRS, and for about 6 months that happened. But right now, the Congress, they're desperate. They're spending the money, and they want to cover some of these deficits, and that's why they are not fighting the increased role of the IRS. Now is going to become more ruthless in the next year or two.
All right, gentlemen, good to talk to you.
All right, Moses, we're back. Now, as you can see, what we got going on with that. Same type of system, same type of folks doing the same type of thing. So what you have to do is you have to send these people some information. We're just asking questions. That's all. You say, I owe you. Could you please provide, you know, just lay it out. You could be polite. You could be courteous, but dead to the point. I mean, if you're claiming that I owe you this exorbitant sum, and then you're going to come and tell me that I owe interest in that, most of what you're getting from the IRS is a threat. They use threats and intimidation. But the way you respond to that is with professionalism and courtesy in the form of documentation. You can mail it to them. Every time they send you something, turn around and send it right back to them. Send something to them. Make a copy of what they sent you and attach it to your response. And ask them, if you say, I owe you, could you explain to me this, that, and the other? And this is my understanding over here, and my intended claimer right here. Are you attempting to violate my human rights? You know, what's going on? You know, don't be afraid. You got to see if we got everybody in the country that's faced with this thing. See, we're under the impression that we work all year long, and then at the end of the year, they're gonna take our money all year long, and then they're going to give us a little portion of it back. And this is the biggest money-making scheme in the world. I mean, you done took $10,000 from me, but if I file my income tax, you're going to give me $3,000 back. And we're looking at, child, I got to get my income tax filed. it's amazing, but we don't sit down and we don't look at this thing in this fashion. And we got to look at this thing. Okay, I'm going to the next document. We're going to deal directly with an affidavit that I sent to a law firm. Now, this law firm called itself helping the sheriff out. Okay? We're representing the sheriff. I said, really? Okay, before we get to this, we have a caller with his hand raised. Eric Curry,
yes.
440.
Yes, this is King Aite Zubeda.
Hey, brother, what's going on? Let me have it.
All right. I wrote Internal Revenue a letter because they just wrote me a letter. And I responded as such. My letter started out, I am King Aite Zubeda, a blood and flesh human being. I am not King Aite Zubeda, the corporate fiction person mentioned on this document in question. I'm responding to your letter under protest and duress and choosing paragraph number 2 labeled under you need to take one of the following actions. Under the Supreme Court case 1906, Hell versus Hinkle, 201 U.S. 43, defined the distinction between natural person and corporation as it pertains to the Fifth Amendment protection within the U.S. Constitution / Bill of Rights. I do not give my consent to do business of any sort with the corporation labeled above as the Internal Revenue in parentheses IRS, whereas I understand that if I haven't brought harm to anyone physically by making this claim, I have not, under God's law, committed a crime, respectfully. I haven't heard anything back from them.
Okay. Well, you put some very, very powerful information in there. Number one, you attack the fiction. This is what we're talking about. And number two, you invoke your born rights, the real ones, the one you was born with. And by bringing the God factor in there, when you mention certain words like God, if you mention divine, your divine rights, divine providence, and things of these nature, okay, so they have a major problem now. And so that's very, very, very well done, brother. But did you send it to them as an affidavit or was it just a letter?
I sent it to them as an affidavit of truth, and I sent it registered mail, which it had to be hand-delivered to the person that sent it to me.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. That was well done, brother. This is what this is all about, and I'm trying to make an effort here to show the brothers and sisters how to do these documents and not only how to do them, but to understand everything that they have in the document so that they are prepared to enforce what they have. And this is something that we have to get accustomed to doing and make this a habit of being able to enforce your documentation. You have anything else you want to add, brother?
Well, I tell you, the post office tried to tell me just send it certified so I get a green slip or what have you. But I have a brother-in-law that works for the post office, and he said once they deliver it right in the hands of the person that delivered it to you, you can bring that commercial lien against that person. And a lot of times this person in the position of authority, and that person don't want to be put on that hot spot.
That's right. Well done, once again, well done. That's how you do it, man. These are your contracts, and we got to get in the habit, our contracts to these people. Hold on, brother, we got another caller with a hand raised.
Sure.
Area code 213.
Hi, Brother Taharka. You spoke with me earlier. I was calling in. I was letting you know I'm on the line. My phone died, but we talked about my court case. Wanted to let you know.
Oh,
I'm
yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're here. Sister, well, you can go right ahead and tell us what the case is about and tell us what happened, because I had a good time listening to that today.
Okay,
no, not. Tell me what happened.
So this case was an unlawful detainer case filed against me from my apartment complex. Now, when you go into the court of law, they don't really care about being just or justice, because prior to this case being filed against me, my apartment complex breached their contract, and they let my roommate leave on a two-day notice. And in their contract, it states that you're supposed to have a 30-day notice if you leave. But they didn't honor that. Not only did they let her abandon the lease, they made her, they made me reportion of the rent. They didn't offer any remedy or any solution on my behalf. They threatened to evict me if I didn't pay. And then they also told me that if I wanted out of the contract, I had to sign another lease to get into another apartment. because she wasn't there to sign off on the lease for the old apartment. So it was just, okay. I think it was a big discrimination. I think it was a lot of discrimination. I'm a student, and they put me $5,000 in debt. Now, I know there's no money, and our country's in an insolvency, but that's what led me to start getting back into researching, because my mom always impressed upon me that we need to study our rights and we need to know our rights. So my apartment complex, they filed an unlawful detainer case against me, and I was really upset when they filed it, but I just kept trying to search for answers. And in the midst of filing paperwork back and forth and answer to the courts, I filed what's called a probate bond into the case, and it addressed how the court targeting my estate. And when I entered this into the court gave me a hard way to go about filing it. They didn't want to file it. So I had to put a cover page that said affidavit of truth. And this goes back to what the gentleman was talking about earlier about having an affidavit of truth on the record. Because
right.
I gave the judge the chance to clarify that she had a right of claim and that she had followed proper procedures in notifying me of the lien that she had against me and that she was attempting to lien against me. And, of course, I heard nothing back. So today when I walked into court, the judge, the first half of our trial, she tried to trample over my rights. Well, I'll tell you, she did trample over my rights. She didn't let me make a special appearance in my proper person. She took my documents and she crossed my name off of my documents in my proper person. And she told me she would only use my corporation name, my all caps name. So I just felt really discouraged. And we took a break, and she was allowing the other party to get the chance to get more evidence to come back after the 30-minute break, put the evidence on the record, and she was going to rule against me. So my mom and I, we came together. We were talking. We were trying to get a hold of someone, and she called Brother Taharka because she always has him. She always had him, his contact information, and he was telling me, you know, when she told you she couldn't use your proper person, you were supposed to object. And to anything that they say, you were supposed to object. And I was objecting, but she kept overruling my objections. So after the break, I came back, and then she asked the other party if they had the evidence, and then they produced the evidence. Now when she came back to me, she was like, is there anything else you would like to say? And I said, yes, I would like to read my affidavit of truth into the record. And she said, she pretty much told me no. She said, why do you need to read it? We don't need a long monologue. I said, because this is my evidence, and I would like to read it. She said, well, we don't need you to read it. And I asked her, are you denying my freedom of speech? Are you denying me the right to enter evidence into the record? And she said, I mean, well, we don't need all that. You can just show it to me. I've seen it. I said, but did you read it? And are you denying me my freedom of speech? Are you denying me my right to enter my evidence into the record? And she said, well, what are you getting at with this? This has nothing to do with the situation. And I said, but it has everything to do with the situation because you guys are targeting my estate. And you don't have a right to a lien. You don't have a perfected claim. And you're targeting my estate. And then she said, well, we're not selling anything. You're not a house. We're not selling a house. You don't own a house. I said, but you know exactly what I'm talking about, and you have yet to answer my point on the probate bond that I entered into this case. And she said, this has nothing to do with anything. And so I said, Your Honor, at the beginning of the trial, what you did was you amended my documents, you crossed out my true name, and you told me that I could only appear under my fictitious corporation name. And she said, what are you talking about? And then I said, did you or did you not cross out my true name and tell me that I can only appear under my fictitious corporation name? And she said, she didn't answer. She didn't even answer. And then I said, my estate is my all caps name. And she said, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, when you issue a judgment, will you or will you not issue it in my all caps name, which is my estate? And she said, I'll enter it on the name you provided on the document. I said, correct. And that name is the name you said I can only make an appearance under, which is my all caps name. And then she said, what are you talking about? I said, that is my estate. And I said, so will you or will you not issue a judgment under my estate that you have no lien right to or no perfected claim against? And she said, that's if I issue the judgment. You can leave my courtroom now. So pretty much what she was saying was she didn't want me to expose the court system. She didn't want me to expose the fraud. She gave me the window to walk out because she knew that I was a corporate ward or what they would consider a slave, and the slave wasn't obeying the master. So she wanted me to get out of that courtroom. And everyone around me was saying stuff like, oh, she's crazy. But whenever a judge gets upset and they don't make a ruling, it's because they know everything that you're saying is true. And when you have an unrebutted affidavit on file, she knows that it's law. It stands as law. So I think it's really important to use these affidavits because you're binding them to a contract. And 90% of the time, they will not answer back to the affidavit because they know everything that you stated in the affidavit is true, and they can't rebut what you say.
I hear you. Now this all happened, which was amazing to me, and I don't know how you let this here happen in an open courtroom full of people.
Open courtroom.
Right?
Yeah, in an open courtroom. They don't look at your documents. That's why I think now she's going to be a little bit more careful about paying attention to documents that come in and out of the courtroom before she ever does that.
Okay, so you objected to every attempt to proceed and walk over you.
Yeah, I was objecting. The first time she wouldn't allow it, but the second time she kept trying to overrule, but I still objected.
Okay, and how old are you?
I'm 21.
You're 21 years old, and you went up there and beat the sister down like that. And was this a Caucasian woman?
I believe she was mixed. I believe she was Hispanic, and I believe she was part Caucasian as well.
Okay.
But she did everything she could to trample over my rights. She didn't care. She wanted the other party to win.
Okay. Now, and she put you out of the courtroom, and she said, what else she said?
She said that she wasn't going to make a ruling that we'll get it in the mail. But when I asked her if she was to issue a judgment, if she would be entering it in the name of my estate, her note, she got really red and her nostrils flared because I asked her, like, if she was going to enter in the name of my estate, and she had no claim. She had no proof of claim. She has no lien right. She has not even shown me her license to practice law. But a lot of people don't understand, too, a judge who operates from the bench as a 14th Amendment citizen is a corporate ward, meaning that they are a slave, and they don't have right to issue or administer law. The only person who can administer law is a sovereign. And she was not operating in a sovereign capacity. Therefore, she can't rule on the case. Because three tiers to law is status, jurisdiction, and adjudication. So when she started questioning me, the first thing I asked her was, are you adjudicating me? You haven't even proved status. If you don't prove status, how can you proceed? How can you proceed?
Wow.
These people do it all the time, and I'm tired of it.
Okay, well, I don't think they're going to be messing with you no more. Not out of that deep down in the open forum. I tell you what, sister, I am quite proud of you. And keep me abreast of what's going on with that situation. And when they send me something in the mail, give me a call. Let me see what, because I want to see this here. I got to watch this whooping to the end.
Okay, Brother Saharka, I will, and I'm going to be on the show from now on.
Okay, sister. Well, thanks. I appreciate
your testimony.
And this is outstanding. Let me open up this other line.
Okay.
Area code 202. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, which question to comment. 202.
Hey.
Are you with me?
How you doing, Saharka?
Hey, I'm fine, brother. What's going on? Let me have it.
I have heard from you since Thanksgiving when you mess with the people in the grocery store.
Well, I mess with them this year too.
About them turkeys.
What's
about them turkeys in that Thanksgiving. Huh?
Oh yeah.
I'm just calling about sister was on, and I'm proud of the young people who comes on and young people who fight in the battle. And show they're doing some studying and know what's happening. And the sister
is
going on. I'd like to see more and more to get them stick up to the plate and put it to them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got some real bad sisters out there. You ain't heard nothing yet, boy. I got one out in Texas so bad. This woman here, I know every time any court judge, a prosecutor, a lawyer see her coming, they go to shaking in their boots. I know that. Now, this one's bad. Yeah. That's what we need.
Everybody tired of it. You gotta constantly bring it to them. But the key is we cut that TV off, and we cut that TV off. Dancing with the Stars, all that. We could get something done.
That's right.
A lot of us don't even know our own rights because they look at a bona hire lawyer, and the rotten ass lawyer sends you down the tube every time.
Oh yeah, well that's his job. He's in bed with the administrators as a masquerading judge. Both of them are members of the bar for a British corporation.
He's not even that. Most of them ain't nothing but they just like the daggone, what you calling them birds out there, the crows, those are the ones the scavengers. I can't think of the name of them. You call them?
Vultures,
they're just like a damn vulture. That's what they are. Same thing, ain't no difference. And we're making it so bad to go to school would be that way.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, they don't. They're not gonna teach them any law. What they're gonna teach them is how to deal with courtroom procedure for the enforcement of public policy, which is masquerading as law. But it is our duty to make sure that they are faced with law on every turn. And give them every opportunity under the sun to call their Supreme Court justice a liar and to the affidavits and all of this good stuff here.
That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. But I'm tired of seeing it, especially in the foreclosure arena with these companies and they breaking in houses and all kinds of stuff. They're doing everything they're big enough to do, but yet we break in the house, and we are, if you're a corporate citizen breaking in the house, you're going to go to jail.
Oh yeah,
but
I had a sister call me the other day. This sister called me, and she has gotten her home given to her, and she says folks come out the clear blue sky, and send us some information claiming they own the house, and went and changed it, opened up the house, took all her stuff out the house, changed the locks on the house and everything. She called the police. And when the police arrived, she showed the police all of her documentation. She said, "Daddy, look at this." Mm-hmm. The cop looked at it. He said, "I tell you what, you go back and you get you a locksmith. You change these locks over. And if they come back out here again, you call me." He said, "We'll take care of it."
A lot of times the police, what they do is, and I had a case when I was telling them, the policeman was telling running this game, well, you know what, the second session thing, it should be on the real estate list. I said, "You don't even know nothing about no real estate list or nothing else." And I got into a thing with him, and I begged him, what you got to do, these are public servants, policemen, FBI, all of them are public servants, and you got to hold them accountable. So what you do is ask them, what's your bond? Once you ask them what's your bond number, they're going to hurry up to do their job. Because
Hold on, brother, I got another caller. Take care. Moving up this other line here. Eric, 412.
Hey, Brother Saharka, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Lisa. What's going on?
How are you?
I'm just fine. Just running over some documents and stuff and trying to get the brothers and sisters to see how easy it is to formulate your position by studying and enforcing your position.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the house and everything, because as we speak, I was at the computer about to type up the affidavit to sue the mortgage company for changing the locks and going in. Once we got in, I don't know if I told you, but once we got in, I realized that the kitchen sink and the metal kitchen cabinets were gone. In the bottom of a house was a hair salon, and they took all of the equipment from there. And, you know, when the police came to fingerprint the day after, I initially made the phone call to them. It was Dumb and Dumber. And they, oh, we can't get any prints. We don't know. I mean, the surfaces won't pick up the dust. And I said, just put it in the police report. That's all I need you to do. This is missing, and this is missing, and this is, this is bizarre. I've never seen anything like this. It was like talking to 2-3-year-olds, and they were ridiculous. And they halfway did the job. They didn't put the information in the police report. But, however, I did get the initial police report, so I'm going to send that to the mortgage company and set them up for a lawsuit. It's actually a blessing in disguise. They give me free money and property. I like it. Yeah, you know, I like it. So do whatever, but as long as... Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they just, what they really expect is for me is a so-called black woman to be stupid. And, you know, I learned from watching Caucasians, you know, they'll tell you they're going to kill you and then smile at you. So the pill's not that bitter. So I've learned to say what I need to say and then smile because they just don't get it. I'm serious. I'll say, you know, I'm going to sue you and smile. And I remember I was just talking to my uncle in Philadelphia, and when my son was about 5, this little 9-year-old little Caucasian kid told him he was going to knock him off his bike and beat him up. Mm-hmm. And I went outside to Harka. Ooh, I'm so glad I've changed. I went outside, and the dad was out there saying something, this Caucasian hillbilly. And I told him, I said, do you realize that I have a gun? And if you say something else, I'll shoot you. And my uncle said, you can't do that. You don't tell him you're going to shoot them. You just empty the clip. And so I'm glad that I don't have that mentality to just threaten shoot people. But however, I will shoot you. But to get back to the mortgage, I'm very, very pleased with the results, and as we speak, I'm waiting to get my paperwork to say my mortgage is dismissed and discharged. So it's exciting. Yeah. It's very exciting.
Just be patient, because they got the bomb, and if the attorney's got any sense at all, they just tell the client, look, there's nothing we can do with this. And this is the same thing that I'm finna go into with this document that I'm about to do now. And this is one that I did on a law firm who was attempting to protect the sheriff. But what I do is, if I'm dealing with one person and somebody else comes in and attempt to help them, well, I give them some of the same medicine. And if anybody comes in, we have them all. And we take our time and meticulously and methodically deal with each and every one of them point by point with the same kind of medicine, and that's what I did with them. And they told the sheriff, look, you're on your own, because this guy here, he didn't go for the boo game. We thought we was doing something, but he done started gnawing on us. We got to leave you on. But at least I got another caller coming in, and I certainly appreciate you being on here.
You're welcome.
All right. Area code 320. 320. Come on in.
Hi, Tahaka. This is Sister Lacey Mikulek Elbe.
Hey, sister. What's going on?
Hey. Now, I'm just wondering, now the affidavit used for this, is that the sheriff warrant?
No,
where the points are?
No, this is the one that I had to do for his law firm. Because when he got that, the one tailor-made for him, he didn't answer it. And so he ran over and got some of his buddies in the law business, in the attorneys at law. And when
right.
he did, they sent me a letter letting me know that I owe the sheriff some money and we are contacting you on behalf of the sheriff. I said, really? I said, well, this is what I got for you. So I turned my attention to them. Because I already had the sheriff on the 14-day affidavit, on the 30-day affidavit, so I wasn't worried about him. He had to respond. We're
right.
going to get him. But we got a brand-new player that done jumped in the game and calling themselves lawyer. So I'm going to take them and do the same thing to them that I was doing to him. And
right.
I was about to go into what I what they got from me, and this is what I sent them. And after they got this, that was the end of them. So he was on his own, and he had no choice but to give his men orders wherever you see him at. Do not stop this man. Don't cut on no lights. Don't do nothing. If he run a stop
nice.
Sign, act like you don't see it. Just keep on going.
And that's for their protection.
Yeah, no, that's for his protection because, see, these guys
right.
are going bad. These are private contractors. So you're not interested in them. I only mentioned them in the initial affidavit as in passing as the one that did the violation. But, see, he is responsible for their behavior because he is the elected official. He's in charge of all these men, and whatever acts they commit, he is liable when you make him liable. So
right.
that's what happened to him. So to keep him from getting really messed up, he gave them orders to not touch this man. Don't stop him. Don't do nothing because he got my you-know-what in a vice. And if one of y'all do something, you might squeeze him. So let him alone. Don't do whatever he want to do. You let him do it. So I discovered that from then on, me and the Popo were riding down the road, bumper to bumper. We didn't want to be there not on no light.
All right.
Okay. Well, let me go into this, and I certainly appreciate you calling, Lacey.
Does it just...
What was it you said now?
Oh, I just wondered if you just disconnect me, but I see it. I heard it say muted now.
Oh, okay. I'll mute out. Okay, everybody, we're back. Okay, this was sent to a law firm. This was sent in the form of an affidavit. This was in response to their attempt to get me off their buddy, the sheriff. I'm not going to call their name. I'm not going to call the case number. Say my position today as well as the dates of the alleged violation occurred is the same. Your offer has been accepted on the proof of claim. Please provide the following proofs of claim or acceptance of liability. If ever a judge understood the public's right to use the public roads, it was Judge Tolman of the Supreme Court of the state of Washington. Justice Tolman stated, complete freedom of the highways is so old and well-established a blessing that we have forgotten the days of the robber barons and toll roads. And yet under an act like this, arbitrary administered, the highways may be completely monopolized if those interests the people submit, then they may look to see the most sacred of their liberties taken from them one by one by more or less rapid encroachment. Robertson versus Department of Public Works, 180 Washington 133-147. The words of Justice Tolman ring most perfectly in the ears of citizens throughout the country today, as the use of the public roads has been monopolized by the very entity which has been empowered to stand guard over our freedoms, that of the state government. And then from here, I go directly into the listing of my points, point by point. I'm asking the law firm to rebut or refute these points by law, according to the Affidavit Act by law. And keep in mind that these particular points are impregnable. I'm not going to read each one, but I'll take, since, no, that's a little too long. I'll do point five. Public highways, as previously demonstrated, the citizen has the right to travel and to transport his property upon the public highways in the ordinary course of life and business. However, if one exercises the right to travel without first giving up the right and converting the right into a privilege, the citizen is by statute guilty of a crime. This amounts to converting the exercise of a constitutional right into a crime. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Heard to Doe versus California, 110-US-516. Please provide a copy of the law. Clearly shows the above Supreme Court rulings have been overturned. Point six, the essential element of due process of law are notice and the opportunity to defend. Simmons versus Kraft, 182-US-427. Yet not one individual in the state of Florida has been given notice of the loss of his or her right, let alone, and this is very, very important, this is a very sticking point, let alone before signing the license contract, nor was the citizen given any opportunity to defend against the loss of his or her right to travel by automobile on the highways in the ordinary course of life and business. This amounts to an arbitrary deprivation of liberty. There should be no arbitrary deprivation of liberty or life. Barber versus Connolly, 113-US-27-31. Yick Wool versus Hopkins, 118-US-356. Please provide proof of claim. Your law firm, and I give their name, has the right to force payment from me, given my name in upper and lowercase letters, a living, breathing being, and not a corporate fiction person, 14th Amendment corporate person, artificial entity, non-due guru, nor straw man, as written in all capital letters, while attempting to collect fiat currency from a fictitious entity as shown as proof on the letter you sent, a copy of which has been added as proof attached to this affidavit. Point seven, please provide a complete and itemized statement from the date of the alleged violation until today's date, your law firm claim including any and all mandatory insurance violations in regards to exercise of freedom of right to travel assigned to the above alleged case, 162010T and so on and so forth, according to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And this goes on, and we got how many points we gave them. We gave them 20 points. And we are expecting a rebuttal and a refutal to all 20 points within 30 days. This documentation was created by me. It is impregnable. And it was sent to the law firm, and needless to say, I did not hear one single peep out of them no more. And after I was sure they got that, I got out on the road about 3 days later, got in my vehicle, rode anywhere I wanted to go, and wherever I saw police, I made sure that I got in front of him to give him an opportunity to do whatever it is he was supposed to do. But by then, the sheriff had already given them the orders not to stop in the story next situation. Okay? All right. Now, let's take a look at why this is possible, because I want you to listen to something here involving a young lady's communication with the police, okay? But before we go to it, we're going to take a little quick break, and we'll be right back. So y'all hold your horses for one moment, and we're gonna take a little quick commercial break, and then we're gonna go directly into this segment. This is very important for you to understand.
Moving the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Officer, I'm so glad you're here. All my personal belongings were stolen while I was enjoying a nice game of tennis.
Well, what can I do for you, ma'am?
What can you do for me? We can start by getting my personal information so I can at least get my license to get home on. After all, as soon as I pull out on the street, there will be a license check and I'll be given a ticket, which will end up costing me a lot of money that I don't have.
Let me save you time and worry here, ma'am. I'm not supposed to let you in on this, but you don't need a license to travel home in your automobile. Notice I said travel and not operate.
Travel and operate. Is there really a difference in the two? I mean, I'm traveling while in the car. What's the difference?
I'll tell you the difference. Traveling is a right you have by nature of birth. God said, go. He didn't say how, right? When you operate a vehicle, it is a form of commerce indicating that you are charging a fare for passengers or moving freight for a corporation of some type. Can you see the difference, ma'am?
I'm starting to see the difference. Could you explain a little more, please?
Back in 1992 in Anderson, Fox and Toomey, 14th edition of Uniform Commercial Code, there is a case in there that says how a car is a consumer good. A man actually beat the courts using this case. Here's the catch though. The minute you put insurance on it, it becomes business property and no longer is it a consumer good. It is then called a vehicle, and it has always been this way all the way back to the Hylton carriage case in the 1790s of carriages in Washington, D.C., same on the house. The minute you insure it, the state owns the business property. Look up address in legal dictionary terms. It is not what you think. What's the first thing they ask before they give to the plate for the consumer good? Is it insured? No? Then go get insurance because we can give you the plate. Tricky bastards, huh?
So you mean to tell me that a car is considered a consumer good until we, the public, put insurance on it? Then it is considered a business good. How is that possible? What's going on here?
Well, you see, ma'am, we in the revenue-generating business, or what you call law, are in the business of misleading people through what we call legal terms. What words you may use in everyday conversation, we in the legal field use against by defining the word differently when we want to take money from you. Most people say nothing and don't know any better. That's why non-resident aliens never register the car, never put insurance on it or the house and so forth. Yes. Even life insurance places the body into admiralty jurisdiction to become a person made liable regardless if he used Federal Reserve notes or not. In that way they do not have to say you are taxed for using the Federal Reserve's private money. A very notable case is Delovio versus Boyd, where it was stated, consumer goods are those which are used or bought for use primarily for personal, family or household purposes. 9-109. It is the intended use rather than the nature of the article which determines its character. For example, goods purchased by a buyer for resale to ultimate consumers are not consumer goods in the hand of such a middleman but constitute a part of his inventory. A mobile home in possession of the person making use thereof is a consumer good. An automobile is a consumer good when purchased by the buyer to go to and from work. Equipment used in business is not a consumer good. Hence, A tractor purchased by a construction contractor is not a consumer good, but equipment. A man won two cases, one in 1975 and one in 1989. After having done an exhaustive search through the archives of several states, it is clearly shown that one need not obtain a permission license from the corporate states to merely travel in the mode of transportation of the time. The key terms in all motor vehicle laws are vehicle, motor vehicle, passenger, transportation, operator, carrier, all having to do with commercial aspects involved using the highways for making a gain in business and not for travel. Some states, as for instance New Jersey, is very clear in their Title 39 annotated motor vehicle law that one is excepted from the entire Title 39 as stated in 39.3-1, which I will quote to you now. Certain vehicles excepted from chapter. Automobile fire engines and such self-propelling vehicles as are used neither for the conveyance of persons for hire, pleasure, or business, nor for the transportation of freights, such as steam road rollers and traction engines are excepted from the provisions of this chapter. This means the entire MV statutes including driver license et al. See Title 18 Infra at PG 28. In researching vehicle laws in New Jersey back to 1890, before automobiles were used, one need only to read the New Jersey Title Chapter 52 sections in Licenses 40-52-1a. All vehicles used for the transportation of passengers, baggage, merchandise and goods and chattels of any kind, and the owners and drivers of all such vehicles, need licenses. There you have it all rolled up in a neat ball. All you have to remember is terms are used in law. Words are used outside of law. I'd like to add one final note and drive this point home. The 1890 title on the case in New Jersey and note it says drive a horse, not ride a horse. How can you drive a horse? This is where words are not used. Ride. But the term drive has a different meaning. The legislators gave it to commit highway robbery under law terms. And they hired the cop to perform that highway robbery under admiralty law so I can collect the booty. Which is an admiralty term for fines collected on land. That states, 40-52-154 states, a provision and an ordinance that no person shall drive a horse attached to a business vehicle without a permit unless he shall have been a resident of the city for 3 months was unlawful, as a discrimination based of length of residence. Jersey City v. Chausson 81 NJL 315, 79 Atlantic Reports 1058, year of 1911. Clearly shows the term vehicle can be a horse-drawn wagon which is replaced by a motor car called a motor vehicle if used to transport passengers and the like mentioned above.
You argue words and they destroy you with terms. They look at you and say, another dumb ass bites our dust. We just love these uneducated idiots, laughing all the way to the bank with your money of easy fleecing. That's reality. And why the myth and the reality book was written in 2008.
All of this information is brought to you by the informer and is intended for educational uses only. It is not legal advice and should not be construed as such. It is simply to show you how you are being taken by yet another corrupt system by being a 14th Amendment citizen slave. Happy huntings.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, before we go into another document, we're going to take a look at who benefits from this type of slavery, because we got major corporations inside the United States that have benefited from slavery and are currently benefiting from the current system. So let us identify some of these corporations, and then we'll go straight into the next set of documents.
Welcome to the Advice Show, media with a common sense approach. So there's a lot of companies in America who are major corporations right now, and a lot of them got a lot of their money and a lot of their push from the death and destruction of black people through slavery. There are 10 companies that I want to focus on. I'm going to post a link in the description box of what I'm looking at as well. But I want to call out these 10 companies of how they got their wealth off of the backs of black men and black women. The first company is New York Life. New York Life found that its predecessor, Nautilus Insurance Company, sold slaveholder policies during the mid-1800s. So New York Life had insured slaves, or a predecessor company, but it's all still the same umbrella. Tiffany & Company was originally financed with profits from a Connecticut cotton mill. The mill operated from cotton picked by slaves. So Tiffany & Company, how they got to where they at today? Off of the backs of slaves. Aetna, everybody know Aetna. Some of you even have Aetna. Insured the lives of slaves during the 1850s and reimbursed slave owners when they died. So that was Aetna was doing. Brooks Brothers, the suit retailer, started their company in the 1800s by selling clothes for slaves to slave traders. So they got benefited from slavery. The next one is Norfolk Southern. Two companies, Mobile and Girard, in the central of Georgia, became part of Norfolk Southern. Mobile and Girard paid slave owners $180 to rent their slaves to the railroad for a year. The central of Georgia owned several slaves. So they would go to plantations and say, hey, let me rent a slave by $180 for a year. They ain't no money in our time period, but there was a lot of money in back then. So you had a brother or sister working on the railroad from sun up to sun down, not getting a dime. And that's very, very hard work to do. And yet, who benefited? Not the black man and black woman that was a slave. Now, the next one is Bank of America. Bank of America found that its two predecessor banks, Boatman Savings Institution and Southern Bank of St. Louis, had ties to slavery. Another predecessor, Bank of Metropolis, accepted slaves as collateral on loans. You know how you offer up your house as collateral or a car or whatever? They were offering up slaves just to get loans from the bank, and the bank accepted that because there was money to be made off of those slaves. USA Today. USA Today reported that its parent company, E.W. Scripps and Gannett, was linked to the slave trade. Wachovia, two institutions that became part of Wachovia, Georgia Railroad and Banking Company and the Bank of Charleston, owned or accepted slaves as collateral on mortgaged property or loans. Once again, another bank was accepting slaves as collateral. AIG purchased American General Financial, which owns U.S. Life Company. AIG found documentation that U.S. Life insured the lives of slaves. So you have a lot of insurance companies that was getting paid pretty good for insurance of slaves. Now, J.P. Morgan Chase reported that between 1831 and 1865, two of his predecessor banks, Citizens Bank and Canal Bank of Louisiana, accepted approximately 13,000 slaves as loan collateral and seized approximately 1,250 slaves when plantation owners defaulted on their loans. So they were paying mortgages on a slave, like you pay mortgage on your house. You know how they foreclose on your house and they take it? Well, they were foreclosing on a slave and taking him or her. Our people was used and abused. They weren't human beings. They were property, like a house. And you see these corporations in America are so big and so grand, but yet how did they get all their money? Off the backs of black men and black women. Yet when we bring this stuff up, oh, it's the past, you shouldn't talk about that. But you don't tell the Jews anything about the Holocaust. That didn't even happen here in America. That happened in Germany. You respect their pain, but you can't respect the things that happened here in America? This is American history, what happened? Black people never had a chance or equal playing field financially. Yes, today we have more money than we ever had. That's the truth. But we never got to the same playing field. You say, well, why black people don't have these big corporations? Well, we didn't have a group of people to use and abuse and make all this money off of and build these corporations. While these same people have built this country from the ground up, yet they get no respect, and yet slavery was law, under the U.S. government. Jim Crow was law. Segregation was law. And when something becomes law, the government is guilty of it, and the government should recompense for it. But do they do that? No. Has the corporation said, well, you know, let's see what we could do, you know, to make it right? No, they don't care. And the moment black people say they should do something, it's the past. Nobody's a slave anymore. Why are you bringing it up? Well, you know what? Why you bring up George Washington then? It's the past. Why you bring up the Civil War? It's the past. You got all these people running around with these Confederate flags all over the place. Hey, the Confederate been gone. It's the past, but yet you still want to run that. So you can do all that. Why black people can't discuss slavery? Why we can't discuss the atrocities of it? Why we can't discuss our Holocaust in this own country? Why can't we discuss that? I'm sorry, we need to discuss this. Because I'm sick and tired of people making slavery to be like this and small. It's not that big of a deal. And usually when you have that attitude, it's because you was educated through a system that does not want to teach you what slavery was. Think about it. You hear about the Africans coming here. Then you hear about them getting free from Abraham Lincoln. Then you hear about Martin Luther King. There's a bunch of gaps in between that whole scenario. The transatlantic slave trade, the estimated 4 million slaves that died on the way over here, the estimated 100 million black people that died in this country under the guise of slavery, because all the years people were slaves, the taking away of our language. Now, I still tell that to people. I hate we don't have our language. It's to a point we have a language. And that's another thing. Don't feel bad about speaking English a certain way. And, you know, we have our slang, we have all that. That's fine. It's okay. English is not our original dialect. Sure, when you go into a workforce, you should speak a way everybody can understand. But speak slang all you want, because everybody else sit there and speak their language, and nobody attacks them. So we should be able to speak all the slang we want. And another thing, don't tell people what it means. I've even gotten to that point now. I'm not telling other people what certain things mean anymore, because I really don't want them to know what we're talking about. I really don't. Some things are just between us. You don't go over to Hispanics and say, hey, tell me what you said in Spanish. You don't go over to Asians and say, tell me what you said, you know, in the different Asian dialects or Arab dialects. You don't say it to them, but always to us, you won't know what we got to say. I mean, what's wrong with being, you know, us and just doing the things that we do? But everything we do is wrong. It's uneducated, it's whatever. But when somebody else do it, it's great. It's no big deal. Forget that. Thing is, more of this truth needs to be uncovered. And if you go and search it out, you will find the things that you would need to find out about slavery and who benefited from slavery and everything else in this nation. Because it's not right that one group benefited and still benefits off the spoils to this day, and yet another group is attacked constantly because they're not at the same level. Well, we didn't get our money like that. We actually have to work for ours. And I know it's going to say, wait a minute, we work for ours too. I'm not saying a regular everyday person. I'm talking about these corporations and these families and all these kids and all these other ones that set up here and directly benefited from slavery. So until we start telling the truth about America and how America got its money and how America got its position and how America got its power, then we stay in the dark. We really do. Hit me up in the comments, future commentaries. Subscribe.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, I'm going to go directly into my favorites. These documents are my favorites. And I use this very, very effectively. And you want to definitely use this when you're dealing with your loved ones in prison and you're dealing with high-profile public officials and stuff. This is what I call my blast letter. This is the infamous blast letter. This is, let's see, how many entries we have here. Hold on one second. We have approximately 50 name and addresses of every radio, television, magazine, talk show, all of them right here in a list. And we put them on notice of the fact that the following information that we are discussing here and our attempt to get justice will be forwarded to these following agencies. And here's a complete list of who going to know about this. The Arizona Republic, address 200 East Van Buren Street, Phoenix, Arizona, 8500. The Atlanta Journal, Baltimore Sun, address 501 North Calvert Street, P.O. Box 1377, Baltimore, Maryland, 321278. I didn't read the Atlanta Journal. Address 72 Marietta Street, Northwest Atlanta, Georgia, 30302. Now, you don't have to write down any of this information. All of this information that I'm reading off is inside my library, and you can get it. The Houston Chronicle, 801 Texas Avenue, Houston, Texas, 77002. Rocky Mountain News, Detroit Free Press, Denver Post, Dallas Morning News, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Christian Science Monitor, Chicago Sun-Times, Charlotte Observer, the Boston Globe. Who else we got over here? Los Angeles Times, Miami Herald, Minnesota Star Tribune, New York Daily News, New York Post, New York Times, Orlando Sentinel, Philadelphia Inquirer, Sacramento Bee, San Diego Union Tribune, San Francisco Chronicle, San Jose Mercury News, Seattle Times, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and let's go. Then we go over to USA Today, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, PBS Channel, NewsHour, Jim Lehrer, National Public Radio, Fox News, CNBC, Dateline NBC, Today Show, Meet the Press, Nightly News with Tom Brokaw, NBC Washington Bureau, 60 Minutes, 524 West 57th Street, New York, New York, 10019, Florida Times Union, ABC Action News, CBS Evening News, some television talk shows, the Oprah Winfrey Show. We go all the way down the whole list, and this is just some of them. We're going to add on to this list so we can cover the whole gambit, but these are the heavy hitters inside the United States, okay? And we want to put them on notice of the fact that we're going to put these people on notice, and we're looking for an interview in order to force an investigation into the wrongdoings and corruption. Also, when you are dealing with your city officials, you got to keep in mind, I did not add the plug here this evening, but it's in a previous broadcast involving the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, the CAFRACOM, that you can force an audit against to bring out all of the books to show us what happened to all the money that you stole, okay? So there's a ton of things that you can do. You can make the kitchen as hot as you want to make it, and you can be polite while you're doing it. We don't want to get upset. We don't, you know, we're making some waves. We don't want to rush anything. Now I'm going into my next letter, which is very, very important, and the young lady mentioned it today. She was able to force the judge. She pretty much shut her down because the judge was attempting to violate her estate. I have a copy of my estate letter, the estate manual, and everything about that letter and what it's designed to do is inside the Tahaka Archives Master Library. And we have that. It would be a pretty much an injustice attempt to read this. It's a very intricate design here. But we have that. And when you understand the authority and power of your estate, you can use that, okay?
Okay, everybody, Tahaka Archives Master Library is up and running again. For those of you who have gotten a hold of Tahaka's Archive Master Library, go ahead and either give me a call or forward me your donation ticket back to hawker53@hotmail.com, and we'll get that thing to you. Also, for those of you who have not accessed this powerful library, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. Click on the donation page up top, and you'll see a complete listing of the packages and stuff that we offer. And, of course, Talk Archive Master Library is now officially listed, and we're back up and running. Okay? Peace.
Okay. Let's go into another document. Now, this document here, because most of us have been programmed to believe that we have to have a card with our picture on it, our address, our height, our date of birth, our fingerprints with a signature, and all of this stuff on it. What you're doing in a situation like that is you're allowing somebody else to declare and an identification of you. That's your job. You're supposed to be providing your own identification. I have in my hand now a document that's called an affidavit of identity. State of Florida, County of Duval, the affidavit herein being first duly sworn upon the oath does hereby state that my legal name, Blase Blase, my current legal address, my date of birth, I present a world citizen passport, a state letter, and a judicial notice and proclamation of status as proof of identity in order to get this notarized. This affidavit is sworn common law identity. I understand that if I willfully make false statements on this affidavit, I may be punished by fine or imprisonment. I certify under penalty of perjury under Florida law that I know the contents of this affidavit signed by me, and that the statements are true and correct. It's dated State of Florida, County of Duval. The foregoing affidavit was acknowledged before me this blank day of such and such a time by such and such a person who is personally known to me or who have produced blank as identification, and being first duly sworn or oath according to law, disposes and says that he or she has read the foregoing affidavit subscribed by his or her, by him or her, and that the matters stated herein are true to the best of his or her information, knowledge, and belief. Signed by me. My name is signed. It's printed. My rank, title is Child of God, and there's no need for a serial number and a notary stamp. That's that. You now officially have identification. Now, at any given point, there's no fingerprint or there's no photograph. At any given point that someone attempts to refute or rebut or ignore and deny this as being adequate identification, now you're officially in position to sue them. It has a notary stamp on it. The notary is operating, occupying the office of Secretary of State. That is all the identification that you need, period. But we are under the impression that we need an identification card. We need something issued by the city and the state with a picture on it that's supposed to be us, and a signature on it that's supposed to be our signature, which they have decided identifies us. But you see, I don't need them to decide who I am. I've already decided it on the affidavit of identity, and what I'm looking for you to do is to violate that, and I'll do the rest, I can assure you, okay? So these documents, all of the documents that we're reading tonight come directly out of my archives, Talk Archives, right there at newdebtelimination.com. But what I want you all to do, because I have some information that I want to give you, and this information is we have one video plug and with one audio. This is some very, very important and some very heavy information. And what I would like for you to do is send a request for this information to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. One more time. tahaka53
hawkerfreevideo@hotmail.com. You can just say to Hawker, send me the free video, audio, and free article, and I'll rush that right straight to you. Price tag, no charge. This is very important. It is vital for us, and inside this video, we deal with what the government does not want you to know about a driver's license. In the audio, we cover everything from court. We cover the bonds, the affidavits, the whole ball of wax right there in audio plug. I mean, this is from every conceivable angle. This is very, very important information, and the best way for me to get this information to you is to just send me an email requesting this information, and I'll send it straight to you. Okay, I put it on my wall on Facebook, so if we're friends on Facebook, it's right there on my wall. If we're not friends on Facebook, send me an email, and I'll send it right straight to you. Okay? All right. Now, let me go back. For those of you who are new, who are just tuning into this broadcast, we won't be able to put everything in here, even though I got a ton of more information and a ton of more documents to do. So tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to do part two of this, and we're going to bring in more information for your education, okay? That's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here, Moist Talk Live 100 on Blog Talk Radio. On the 12th, which is Thursday of this month, Dr. Scott Whitaker will be with us on Moist Talk Live 100. Whatever you do, don't miss this powerful broadcast. Make sure, I'm telling you this, make sure that you bring pencil and paper to this broadcast, because the information that this guy is going to drop needs to be written down and needs to be acted upon. And I do act upon it. I've got a chance to visit with him right here in Jacksonville, Florida. When he came down, he agreed to be a guest on my broadcast, but he was so busy and I didn't remind him of the broadcast. So I'm going to be sending reminders to him to make sure that he gets all the reminders necessary. He will be here on the 12th of this month, which is this Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, again, on the 17th of this month, Michael I.M. Hotep of the African History Network will be my guest on this show. We will be dealing with our ancient history, and we will also be dealing with our current events. That's Michael I.M. Hotep right here Tuesday night, June the 17th on Moist Talk Live 100. And then on the 19th, I will be a guest, the African History Network, with Michael I.M. Hotep, and we'll be discussing law and contract law and history as well there. So make sure that you all tune in to this broadcast, okay? All right. Now, let's go get down into this child support thing. And we're going to deal with that, and keep in mind, we can do the same identical thing with the documentation on this child support thing, okay? Well, let's take a look at this thing.
Hi, everyone. This is Carlos Morales of Truth Over Comfort Podcast, formerly called the Renegade Variety Hour. You can find us at www.truthovercomfort.net. Today, we're talking to Eric Dearman, a father's right advocate who runs Fathering Families and CustodySimplified.com. How are you doing today, Eric?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, ever since I came out as a whistleblower against Child Protective Services, as I was a former investigator, I've gotten an influx of messages from fathers being bullied in family court, having issues with CPS, and having issues getting rights to be able to visit their children, especially for fathers who never ended up getting married to the mother of their children. This isn't much of a surprise, for family court and many other aspects of society have taken a negative stance towards fathers. A Stanford study of 1,000 divorced couples selected at random found that divorcing mothers were awarded sole custody four times as often as divorcing fathers in contested custody cases. A study of all divorce custody decrees in Arlington County, Virginia, over an 18-month period found that no father was given sole or even joint custody unless the mother agreed to it. According to Frank Bishop, the former director of the Virginia Division of Child Support Enforcement, almost 95% of custody cases in Virginia were won by mothers. Not just in Virginia, though. An Ohio study published in Family Advocate found that fathers seeking sole custody obtained in less than 10% of cases. And a Utah study conducted over 23 years found similar results. According to the 2000 Census Bureau report, mothers comprised 85% of all custodial parents. Even the 80 to 95% maternal preference documented by these studies, though, understates family court's discrimination against fathers by identifying many coerced child custody arrangements as uncontested. Eric, what's your backstory and how did you get involved with fathers' rights?
Yeah, well, my inspiration came from my own experience in a custody battle where there was loads of false accusations and I wasn't married, so I really felt like I was the underdog in this case, and statistically speaking, I knew it was going to be a struggle for me, and especially because in my scenario, the mother was trying to keep me from seeing my child, and in the process, I was looking for some resource to help myself, and I wasn't able to find a well-structured resource with clear guidance on navigating a custody battle. So I set out to create one after my process was complete.
Yeah, so your issues that you had reminded me a lot of different cases that I dealt with Child Protective Services, namely fake allegations by mothers in order to get sole custody, especially whenever a, say, boyfriend, new boyfriend, gets involved in the relationship. The quickest way to go from to deal with a divorce case, which a divorce case can sometimes take 3 to 4 months to get through the courts, is to have the mother make a false allegation of domestic violence or child abuse towards the father. That moves it straight to a family court and to a domestic violence court. And then the mother will end up getting the rights, which screws over the father, and then the father ends up having to pay out the ass almost for the rest of his life or until the child's about 23 years old for the child. And as many people know who've dealt with divorced mothers, a lot of that money doesn't necessarily go into the pockets of the child as much as it goes into the pockets of the mother.
Right. And interestingly, you should say that that was exactly my scenario where the mother had met another father and had met a partner, a new boyfriend, and quickly started to train my child to call him the dad. And they together started making allegations that were going to make it really difficult to continue being in my child's life. So these types of allegations are very common in family courts, and it's something that I'd really like to help men prepare for in these situations.
Absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to those allegations of maybe false domestic violence, false child abuse, or in other cases, false rape cases, the accusation is actually used as evidence rather than a preponderance of evidence actually showing whether or not something is true or false, and a lot of that comes from a society which kind of demonizes fathers and men as a whole, that exacerbates the idea that men are disposable, men are the soldiers, men are the empathetic ones, when in fact, men are much less likely to abuse their kids than women. Women are actually 3 times more likely to abuse their own children, which is remarkable considering how the media always perpetuates men as being the violent ones. And I swear, if I get any comments on this YouTube video stating, well, women are more likely to abuse their kids because they're more around them, I don't think it's okay for guys to hit their coworkers whenever they're dealing with deadlines, even though they're around for 10 hours. I don't think you're allowed to use the excuse that violence or hitting a child is okay. I just don't think morally that's correct, and I also don't think that's ever brought up in other parts of society. If I'm hanging around my girlfriend for 10 hours a day, it's certainly not okay for me to strike them. And it's certainly not okay to hit a developing child who is relying upon you evolutionarily for almost everything.
Yeah.
So, So when it comes to this war against fathers, well, I mean, you see it all the time. Within the last 30 years, fathers have been exiting the picture in the childhood of children more and more. There's many things we can blame in regards to this, whether it be the welfare state, which has incentivized the destruction of the family structure through the subsidization of women who leave their spouse. Of course, there's certain sections of the feminist movement which have categorized men as more likely to be potential rapists than positive role models, and have essentially omitted the importance of men by undermining every one of their accomplishments as being part of their male privilege and rape culture, rather than their ability to create and work under pressure, as well as many feminists undermining the benefits of stay-at-home mothers by demeaning and calling them slaves, which has promoted mothers to leave their children and stick their children in these state gulags known as public schools. So you see it over and over again, whether it's in a number of different social movements, whether it's through the media, politicians, and just individuals as a whole. They've really demonized men in today's society. And by demonizing men, they have demonized fathers, which has really ended up hurting more than just men. It's actually ended up hurting children as a whole.
That's interesting that you brought that up, Carlos, because I was just reading about a case out in San Francisco where a married couple made an agreement orally about sharing the kids and how it was going to go. And they both went into work. And about lunchtime, the father gets a call from his boss, and who says there's two police officers downstairs. And when he goes down there, the police officers came to serve a restraining order. He wasn't going to be allowed to go home. He wasn't going to be allowed to see his kids. So for 6 months, he had to stay out separately. And at that point, a status quo is established where the mother is seen as the primary caregiver, and that's really hard to overcome because once a schedule has been established, the judges don't like to change that. And in this situation, despite the fact that her allegations of domestic violence were found out to be false, he had spent all of his money carrying a separate home, taking care of them, and dealing with the legal process. And unfortunately, this happens all the time.
Absolutely. And, I just wanted to bring a statistic here. From the Center for Disease Control, 85% of all children who show behavior disorders come from fatherless homes, which is 20 times the average. Now, I realize that the term behavior disorder is absolutely overused in society. As I've lined out before in my Drugging of America video, but that doesn't mean the statistic is completely bunk. Anger, anxiety, frustration, resentment commonly occur when needs are being unmet. That need, in many of these cases, is one of security, one of love, affection, and attention. There's a biological want for the attention of parents, and if you're missing one of the two parents, you're only able to give so much to the child to meet those needs. This isn't to say that it's impossible for a non-biological parent to meet these needs, i.e. a stepfather, but it seems that, at least according to research, it suggests that foster parents and step-parents are much more likely to be abusive than biological parents. It shouldn't be controversial, yet the destruction of the family unit has been occurring so rapidly in the last 40 years that it amazes me how little this is ever brought up. Instead, it's the single mother who is glorified by the media, which leaves the father by the wayside. Another statistic is that 75% of all adolescent patients in chemical abuse centers come from fatherless homes, which is 10 times the average. And you got to think, maybe.
Okay, we back. All right, now, we're going to go to another document, and I saved this document for last, because I only put this document out one time. Mm-hmm. This, but one time. And this document, first of all, we have already discussed all of the supporting structure for putting this document
into American society. The title of this document is a judicial notice and proclamation of status. Now, we dealt with the notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. The notice of understanding and intent and claim of right is attached to the Declaration of Human Rights issued by the UN, which clearly states no man shall be deprived of a nationality. Now, the way I do this, I put the notice of understanding and intent and claim of right combined with the Declaration of Human Rights down on First Street. Then I'm going to do everything else, put everything else out and all in commerce and all that. Now I'm going to take a judicial notice and proclamation of status, and I'm going to take it down the street, and we're going to put that down on 33rd Street. Now, all these documents put into the same system, in the same city, in the same county, in the same state. They weren't put together. They were put separately, but they've been put there. Now, this document is going to be incorporated into my will. I'll put a will on file, or either I'll incorporate this into my trust. The judicial notice and proclamation of status clearly outlines your nationality, its ancient background, its history, and all of this information is filed along with your will as an administrative portion to your will. We got the affidavit of identity as a portion. We got the estate letter as a portion. We got my domicile as a portion. We have the judicial notice and proclamation of status. You can put the declaration of the rights of indigenous people along with that and add this as attachments, as an apportioned attachments to your will and file that in the court as a deed. Okay? Now that we got that in there, it is at this point I'm officially in position to defend myself against any human rights violations, any violations against the rights of indigenous people, any violation of racism, any of this stuff. I can use these documentations. I can use this stuff and provide proof of claim that it has already been accepted, it has already been filed, here's the date, here's the time, there is no excuse. Here's proof right here. You violated this, that, and the other. Here's a copy of the Declaration of Human Rights. Here's a copy of my nationality, which you deprived me of. Here's a copy of everything. Okay, right here. All right. Now, for those of you who do not know the judicial notice and proclamation of status is, we're going to run over a little bit of it. I'm not going to be able to do all of it, but it's quite thick. It says, to all elected United States Republic officials and public servants of federal, state, city, and municipal governments, personnel, and corporate entities concerning the Constitution and all statutory and civil law codes of the land, etc. Known or know all men by these presents upon my inherited nobility and upon my private aboriginal indigenous proper person status and commercial liability, I, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, being duly affirmed on the consanguine unity pledge, my national political and spiritual allegiance to my Moabite Moorish nation, being the archaic aboriginals indigenous of Amexum, the Americas, in parentheses, standing squarely affirmed upon my oath to the five points of light, love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice, do squarely affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and having knowledge and firmly established beliefs upon the historical, lawful, and adjudicated facts contained herein, being confident in my own proper person,
to attest to this affidavit upon which I place my signature, whereas I state, proclaim, and declare the following to be true, correct, certain, complete, not misleading, supreme, and not intended to be presented for any misrepresented color or improper use or purpose, to wit, that I, Tahaka Montana Bay, am a noble of the El Moroccan Empire, North America, Emperor representative, proper persona, my own proper self, being Moorish American, descendant of the ancient Moabites, Moors by birthright, feehold, prognogen, heritage, Bele aboriginal, indigenous to the land, Amexum, / Americas, territorium of my ancient Moabite, Moorish foremothers and forefathers, to wit. And this thing goes on and on, clearly affirming, and of course it's signed, it's witnessed, and notarized, which makes it a very bona fide document. My freedom of rights to travel is also listed in here. The entire story of my ancient culture is listed in here, and this document is a part of my will, and it's listed as such, and it's filed as a deed. Usually, when you do a will, what the court wants you to do is to go get an attorney to do your will for you. They don't want you to do your own will because it is the duty of the court to carry out your will. So what they try to do in a lot of cases is they attempt to obstruct you from filing your will. And what I try to tell people to do, you go in there into your county recorder's office and you attempt to put your will on record. Just tell them, this is just my will, and, you know, I just want to file my will. And if they can go ahead and file that, make sure they file that as a deed. If they're saying, well, you can't do that, you're going to have to get an attorney. And you just ask them, do you have a miscellaneous filing? Because we just want it on the record. And say, yes, we have a miscellaneous filing. We'll file it miscellaneously, as long as we get it on the record. If they say we don't have a miscellaneous filing, then we'll take it over to the federal court and we get it filed, but we got to get it filed. Now, if they're trying to obstruct us all the way across, obstruct you all the way across the board, now we're talking about a lawsuit. Okay, we're gonna get this will filed, and we're going to use it while we're living, because they want you to get an attorney to do it, because the attorney will do your will for you, and he will take your will and put it into a cabinet in his office. He won't make your will a public record until after you are deceased. That keeps you from exercising any authority and power over the criminals. Okay? It all boils down to one thing. It's called obstruction of justice. But what we're going to do in this case here is we're going to put this information in a position so that we can enforce justice. We will get justice one way or another. So your judicial notice of proclamation of status should be an administrative portion of your will. Do up your common law will, get that done, add these in as exhibits. Your affidavit of identity should be listed as an exhibit. You can list it as exhibit A. You're writing that into the will. And then you will take a copy of that affidavit of identity, and right across the top, Exhibit A. Then you will take your estate letter and list it into the will as Exhibit B. Write it out, estate letter. See Exhibit B. And then take the estate letter right across the top, Exhibit B. And you're going to staple all of this to make that a part of your will, to make sure that when you're doing your will, every page in that will has to be counted. You have to give a total account of all of the pages in the will. Make sure that we got all those little procedures done. And then we go to the next page, which is going into the rights of indigenous people. You can have that in there. See Exhibit C. You might want to have your domicile, Exhibit D, and so on and so forth. And you simply write that in as an administrative portion to that will so that you can get that will on file. Okay, you can do the same thing with your trust. And a trust, it depends on how you plan on using this thing. A trust is more powerful than a will, but I recommend that everybody get a will on file. Get your will on file. That way, when something goes wrong, nobody else can step in and begin to tell your family members who's going to get what. And and then if you don't have that set where your children are in place to do anything, then the state takes over and take your property and take your assets and take all of this stuff. So it's important for us to get our will on file. If you don't know anything about a trust, don't worry about it. Get that will done. And this is something that a lot of us don't have done, and we need to have that will on file. We need to get that on file so that we can do some things. Okay? All right. I just want to bring that part out, and that will be the last document that I will do for this evening. But tomorrow night we're going to come back with other documentation and other information involving what we're doing. We'll take a quick break, and I'll be right back. Y'all hold on.
In a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904 904- 303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amana El Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard.
Hello. What are you doing here?
I came here on the chance I would catch you at home. How are you doing?
I am doing okay.
I came here to explain something that I thought you might like to know about the formation of government.
They're all corrupt.
When government was formed, the people of the town elected the mayor and others. Then the provincial government was put in place to act as an intermediary between the various towns for the province. The federal government was put in place to act as an intermediary to facilitate trade or commerce between each province or state.
Why then does the federal government want to regulate everything, even if it is not for commerce or trade?
The federal government wants to regulate everything because there is money to be made in doing so. What should happen is the town collect taxes on a per-use system and then it flow to the provincial government and finally to the federal government. That is not how it works now, however. Right now the federal government collects taxes and transfers it down the ladder to the provincial government, and the provincial government pays the towns except for the property taxes which are collected by the local town.
What would be the advantage of the other way of doing it?
Simple. If the province did not do something correctly and mishandled funds or a task, then money could be withheld until the province corrected its error, and likewise the province could withhold funds from the federal government if wrongdoing was uncovered. It would be a system of checks and balances for each level of government because each would be competing, if you will, for the revenue.
Why don't we fix it?
It would take a lot more than you or I to correct this. Just like the government has now put in place mandatory vaccinations for all school kids without parental consent.
How is that lawful and how do we stop this madness?
The federal government has put this mandate in place as a measure of population control or an experiment. If one looks back on genetically modified food, G.M.O, and realizes that the government operates within the framework of the World Banking Cartel, then it's not hard to figure out that big business and the almighty dollar are behind it. Look also at the smart meter and how that is violating our rights and the Criminal Code of Canada. The government also told us that fluoride is good for our teeth. We know this is incorrect. We also know that other things stated by the government are also incorrect. The government then states that if you do not get your kid injected with the vaccine, that they will not permit your kid to attend school. What few people realize is that the school gets paid a set amount per kid attending school. If no one attends, then the school and the teachers will not get paid. This is how we put pressure on them.
You mean we should take our kids out of school because of this vaccine bullshit? If the school will not permit our child to attend, then wouldn't that give us lawful excuse to keep our children out of school?
Yes. Everyone has the right to protection of person, and as parents we have a moral and legal obligation to our kids. What if we let the government inject your kid and it causes permanent health problems? Is the government going to come good and fix the child that they messed up in the first place?
I don't think the government can fix anything and in fact screw everything they mess with up.
Exactly. And besides, you don't learn much in school anyway. Therefore, if you are going to send your child to school, make sure they know that you do not agree with mandatory vaccination, or better still, get your child out of the government facility and watch how fast they smarten up.
A friend of mine said that her daughter goes to school and they have a TA in the classroom for each child. I don't want to seem stupid, but what the hell is a TA?
The TA is a teacher's assistant, and they are there to help the child understand what the teacher is explaining. In some cases the TA will read and write for the student.
Not all students would need help though.
Correct, but they even take math tests and alike as a group so that it is a team effort. The problem with this, however, is what happens to the lazy student. They will let the workers drag them through the grade or sucker the TA into doing a lot of the work. This is all in an effort to dumb down the students so that they are not thinkers but instead will be sleepy sheep that the government can control.
This is messed up. I think anyone with half a brain would remove their child from this madhouse we call school and put them into alternative home school.
I agree, however, in today's society, two parents work in order to make ends meet.
Yes, as per our previous discussion, you explained how inflation and taxes are used to keep the people with just enough money to live, and each year it gets tougher.
That is correct. Taxes and inflation are a means to control the population.
A parent would be wise to attend a day or two of school with their kids to verify the claims made here about the TA. Due to the forced vaccination mandate, remove the child from the school. With some research, it will be noted that some vaccinations cause paralyzation and brain as well as nerve damage. The government does not warn you of the dangers. You as the parent may not be notified of when your child will be vaccinated. If the student missed the day, they may just send someone to do it at a later date without warning. The government will not tell you of any side effects or risks.
Right, and big companies are behind it. The sad part is your kid could be forced into it, and once the damage is done, there is no repairing it. Your child is at the mercy of you as a parent to protect them, and without you, the child is not of legal age to make a decision, and the staff at the prison, I mean school, will do what they are told by the government. If they don't, then they lose funding and are their job.
Seems to me that we are better off not following the government's demands. Even if we tell the teacher in our school that we don't want our child vaccinated, who says they will listen or care?
That would be my take on it. Just think of all of the bullshit charges that are laid each day. Without the population compliance, the courts and the police department wouldn't have the revenue to pay the people, and the madness would end.
The only way that would happen is if the people stand together and form a united front.
Exactly.
Okay, Moore, we're back. Now, that's some very critical math there, and I'm trying to get as much in as I possibly can. Keep in mind, we have 18 minutes left. If anybody got any questions or comments, now's the time to go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the phone line so that you can get in. My reason for bringing this information here to you this evening is to show you how easy it is and how affordable it is to defend yourself simply by paper. But you're going to need some tools. You're going to need to have your computer, and you have your good solid computer. Make sure it's running fast and quick, and have you get your little cheap printer attached to that computer, so anytime anything comes to you in the mail, some type of threat, bill collector, whatever, you can deal with it immediately. Do not postpone these things. Say, well, I'm gonna next week I'm gonna get on this. No, you got your horse ready to ride right now. Go ahead on and deal with that and get an immediate response of what you will discover. And see, this thing I've been doing this for a long time, and I've discovered that speed plays a very, very important point in things. I remember once I was dealing with a sister, and she was having a problem with the mortgage company. And I told her, I said, now, this is what we're going to do. I said, as soon as they send you something in the mail, these are our rules. These are the rules that we are going to deal with them with. As soon as they send you something in the mail, open it up, look at it, call me on the phone, tell me what's going on, and we will immediately deal with that. Okay, we're not going to postpone anything to next week. We're going to deal with it immediately. Because when these people send something out, 3 days later, they should get a response from you. Boom. Now, the response from you is going to be something that they're going to have to really think about and do some work about. And what they're forced to do now, especially if it's coming from me, is heavy. Is to send you another letter stating, we got your letter. Please give us some time so we can look at this. All right? Now, if they send that, then I'm going to immediately send them something back, and it'll arrive 3 days later. Boom. Speed. Keep the pressure on. Keep the burner on. Area code 313. Come on in. Tell me who you are. 313.
My name is Brother Milton. I was calling about some moving violations, and
okay.
These tickets, they said you can either pay the ticket or you can ask for a time to go to court. And okay. My understanding is that I would put in red ink something on the tickets?
Yeah, you can. You got the tickets. When did you get the tickets?
I got the tickets Sunday, this past Sunday. I don't live in. Mm-hmm.
It don't matter where
you live.
Oh,
the date.
You got a ticket Sunday. All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, and take the tickets. Right, cause the phase of no contract, refuse the contract. Did you sign the ticket?
I signed the ticket. It read the ticket. When I signed the ticket, I put under threat of duress or coercion, because they had on the ticket, it said you could be arrested.
Okay. All right. That's fine. No contract, refuse the contract on all three tickets. You said three, right?
Yes.
All right. And get you a certificate of service. Go ahead and fill that out, sign it. You might want to get it witnessed and notarized. Attach that to make copies of those tickets. Make copies of everything that you're giving them. Anytime you're dealing with them, you want to make copy for them, copy for you. And take that down there and give that to the clerk of the court.
Okay. Clerk of the court.
Yeah. Just get that to them and go ahead on a walk away. And if they're telling you that you can't file that or whatever, just ask them if they got a miscellaneous filing. You just want a record of the fact that you refused contract with them.
Right.
Okay, and now after you do that, then you are ready to put your affidavit together and go ahead and light some real fire up under the people that's responsible for attempted robbery.
Yeah,
like a theory.
And now, yeah, because they had kidnapped me out of my conveyance. They broke into broke the window into the car and kidnapped me and incarcerated me in a cell.
Okay, cause, so you refuse contract. Now, what happens, and what I try to teach people to do, and I want everybody to listen to me, it's gotten to the point now because they have realized that these kind of broadcasts are going on. This truth is coming out all over the internet, YouTube. We got websites. We got people traveling across the country teaching this stuff, and they are fighting desperately to hold on to the fraud, hold on to the robbery, because this type of robbery have netted billions and billions and billions of dollars for them. But now they're waking up to the nightmare that this thing is falling down. The whole system is crumbling. So what I try to tell people to do from now on, go on online and look for the little spy shops where you want to get your little audio and video devices, and install these devices in your automobile. You can put on your little necklace. You can wear it on your bracelet where you get audio and video, and it's got the little USB thing that you can put in there and upload this information to your computer and create you some evidence, because you have to remember the rule is no evidence, no case. And so what you want to do, I'm asking everybody to send for this, send for these free articles and these video and audio plugs. I got a video and I got an audio that's vital for us to understand this stuff now, because it's to the point now where we can no longer afford to go out of our house and get out of our vehicle without having these recording devices on us. We got to have this stuff installed in the automobile. We got to have it installed in our person. And inside the free video and stuff that I'm giving out to people, if they just send me an email to hawker53@hotmail.com, you can listen to this video and get to the website, because these guys here, they got software now installed where they can record, and this information is recorded to their computer at home. This is outstanding. This is all we need.
Yeah.
And so if we can get this, now we ready to rock and roll. We can go ahead and snatch the chandelier out and throw it on the floor, because it's over. So once we start getting in there and presenting this evidence and sending it down and letting them know how many thousands of dollars that we're looking for, and you got 30, 40 people in the same city doing the same thing from one end of America to the other, we have a very serious problem. The threat to the robbery is real, real, real.
Yes.
And so that's what I'm encouraging everybody to do. To get this information, all you got to do is send me an email to tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll send you that video and that audio plug, and listen to the video. Now, the video explains everything that the government don't want you to know about driver's license. Okay, it includes all of that software that you need to be getting, because once you get this and record this information as evidence, if they try to throw the case out on you, you can say, well, no, there's too much damage here. I'm going to have to appeal to get this done. But keep them lawsuits flying on everybody, on the shelf, the men, start putting liens against these properties, pull these oaths of offices, make sure they match the Constitution of the state, make sure the policeman oath of office and is intact and all that straight, and if it ain't, frown. You got to frown. Because we are engaged in daily full-scale war, and it's been going on so long until most of us think it's normal.
Yeah.
It's not normal for you to back out of your driveway, and when you ride and where you're going, you got to be making a conscious effort to do this, that. You're looking around, and you're looking down side streets trying to see if the car parked down there that stopped you the last time. You got to slow down in this area. You got to slow down over here. You know, that ain't living.
Yeah.
It's not living. So you got to get these people off of you so that you can be free. It's nothing like being free. When you're free, then you can think. You can plan. You can do some things. And if some of us get so caught up, we get a few extra dollars on the job. We put in some overtime and looking forward to getting the overtime, and then we get off of work on Friday and we go home, boom, we get pulled over.
Right.
We get a ticket,
yeah,
no seatbelt,
right.
Speeding, headlight out, no tag, you're $350. That's all overtime.
Yes.
So we got to stop these people from rolling us. So that's what you do in involving that. You get the tickets on off you. And then you go ahead on and start putting your affidavits together and serve these things on these people. And when you're serving them, make sure that they understand that you are suing them in their personal capacity if you're dealing with a public official. That means
so
that
I need to get the sheriff's name, right?
Yeah, you're going to need to gather all your information that you're going to need to get. And, of course, you got forgetting something and you need to talk to me, you can call me. After 10 a.m.
Okay.
in the morning and before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because we're coming back tomorrow night with some more of this stuff, because we got a ton of more information to get out. We got more documentation to bring out, and I want to make sure that we get this all in. So we'll be doing part two of this broadcast tomorrow night. But
Thank you.
Everybody, go ahead and send me your email. Send that to tahaka53@hotmail.com, T-A-R-H-A-K-A. 53@hotmail.com, and I'll send you that video and that audio plug, and I'll send you my free articles. That way you can look over everything, get this stuff under your belt, and we're ready to rock and roll. You got another question, brother?
No, thank you.
All right, I certainly appreciate you calling in. Now, as I was saying, speed is how we want to move. We want you to get something from them. We want to jump on it immediately. If you get a summons in the mail, that's an invitation. Yeah, somebody send you to the invitation to the party, you might say, well, look, I don't feel like going to the party. That's an invitation. But respond. Let them know what your position is. And make a copy of it so you're now officially ready to enforce your position because you responded. You got evidence of the fact that you responded. They sent you what they thought. You sent them what you thought. And so we can compare public policy, which is masquerading as law, against real law. Okay? Now, we only have 5 minutes left, and I hope you all got something out of this. Keep in mind that, once again, on this Thursday coming, we will have Dr. Scott Whitaker, the author of the book, Medicine. Dynamic Brother, make sure when you do this broadcast, just like you today, have your paper and pencil handy. That's Thursday night, June the 12th. Dr. Scott Whitaker will be on our broadcast. Also, June the 17th, Michael I Am Hotep, the African History Network, is broadcast. Will be on at 10 o'clock tonight. So you all, I'm not sure if he's got a show tonight, but I know he does have a show. I think it's on Wednesday and Thursday night at starting at 10. I think 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock or something, but I'll be there on the 19th. But he'll be here on the 17th on Morris Chalk Live 100, June 17th, so don't miss that. But tomorrow night, you all make sure that you're here, and we'll continue with this thing. Make sure you got your paper and pencil with you, and we'll continue. I'm tired. And I've been your host, Saga Money LB, and I certainly appreciate y'all being here. And you all have a good evening, okay?
Jasmine in the rain, I can feel a cold chill creeping up my back. But if it keeps on pouring down, I'll be out here till my baby's back. I'm stumbling through the city, stopping everyone I see. Oh yeah, girl, you got me going crazy, 'cause strangers look like you to me. But if it takes me all night long, I'll keep walking till my back ain't got no bone. Oh, yes, I will, darling. Dummies in the showcase, they all seem to come alive. Oh, yeah. And it looks like they all laugh and sing, you better go somewhere. Yes, I will die, y'all. I'm stuck.